Good morning. It's good to be with you this Saturday morning. It sure would be nice if we could tap into the healing ability of God's creation and have our body repair itself. I know it sounds too simple, but your body is designed to heal and repair itself. Self-regulating, self-healing, trying to constantly correct any imbalances. But it helps if you have information on how to help yourself. Now, I'm going to read some articles to you. And I want these to be for your consideration this morning, because I think in here, you might find a few gems that you might be able to put into practice and get some benefit from. Now, I haven't read a lot of articles on the air like this, but it's interesting. Just consider it. Let me see. This is from the journal Age and Aging 2016, page 1093. All right, here goes. The effects of sauna bathing and the risk of dementia were studied at the Kuopio Ischemic Heart Disease Risk Factor Study, the KIHD, involving more than 2,000 middle-aged men living in the eastern part of Finland. I realize that Finland is not the United States of America, but they have high heart disease there, maybe more so than what we have here. The study participants were divided into three groups: those taking a sauna once a week, those taking a sauna 2 to 3 times a week, and 4 to 7 times a week. Here's the good information. The more frequent sauna takers had a lower risk of dementia. Among those taking a sauna 4 to 7 times a week, the risk of any form of dementia was 66% lower, and the risk of Alzheimer's disease was 65% lower than among those taking a sauna just once a week. Folks, if a drug came out that could reduce Alzheimer's by 66%, dementia by 66% and Alzheimer's by 65%, it would be on every billboard and every magazine. Every physician would be on the news discussing these overwhelming benefits. But no, a sauna is probably not going to be a prescription drug. You can't patent it. So whether you get into a dry heat sauna or a steam sauna or an infrared sauna, whether it's near or mid or far infrared, hey, it's a sauna. Been around for 2,000 years. Previous results from the disease risk factor study have shown that frequent sauna bathing also significantly reduces the risk of sudden cardiac death, the risk of death due to coronary artery disease, and other cardiac events, according to Jerry Lockinen, the study leader. Sauna bathing may protect both the heart and memory to some extent via similar, still poorly known mechanisms. However, he notes, it is known that cardiovascular health affects the brain as well. The sense of well-being and relaxation experienced during the sauna may also play a role. Well, you know what? Who cares if they don't know what the exact mechanism is? I know that's interesting. That'd be very, very fun to have that information. But if I asked you, what do you think a sauna does? Well, you'd probably just say, well, it helps you sweat out the poisons. Or it cleans you out. Yeah, you don't have to overthink it. Does that tell you what the importance of consistently removing toxins from your body is? I have read before that the use of a sauna increases what's called human growth hormone. You don't really have to be an expert physiologist or an endocrinologist to know what human growth hormone does. It basically is going to repair any system in the body that needs to be repaired. So if you've had an injury to your body, you might benefit by having a little greater expression or surge of human growth hormone. What if you've had a bad car wreck, or you've had an injury, or you've had a surgical procedure where there's a setback? How often do I hear about people having a surgery, but they tell me, I'm having a hard time getting over this, I haven't gotten my strength back? I hear those every single day. Or what about if a person has a severe emotional or what I should say is an emotionally exhausting event. Might want to have a little bit of human growth hormone. But saunas have been shown to do that. I know what you're thinking, though. You're thinking, well, Dr. Morgan, can I just go outside and work in the garden today? It's like a sauna. Well, you're right. I can't argue with that. You're probably right. If you want to join me on the air, someone was just trying to call. I'll take your call now. It's thank you very much for your call. How can I help you?
Yes, I am wondering, would hot yoga be considering close to a sauna?
I would take it gladly, yeah.
Okay.
How hot is the yoga?
They heat it to about 92.
Well, do you perspire easily when you do that?
Oh, yes. You sweat bullets.
You mean so it's not a problem perspiring, is it?
No, not at all.
Well, can I ask you a couple questions?
Sure.
Before you go to yoga class or the hot yoga and then afterwards, do you feel better afterwards than what you felt before you went into it?
Oh, definitely.
Interesting.
I can sleep so much better. You know, and of course, in the yoga, when you're in the hot room, you're able to stretch your muscles out much more. So that's beneficial for me.
How do they heat the room?
Just by the thermostat, you know, the unit in the room.
So you're going from 67 degrees outside this morning into 92.
Right.
Interesting. Is this in Tyler or somewhere else?
No, we do hot yoga here in Jacksonville.
Oh, in Jacksonville.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that.
That's yes. Cool.
Well, where does it take place? At somebody's home or at a...
No, at Trinity Mother Francis or Christus. Christus.
How many of the Christus nurses and physicians come to hot yoga class with you?
Well, I don't know. The class is kind of coming up. We're up to about six people now.
That's six people that are benefiting, right?
Definitely. Uh-huh.
How long does class last?
1 hour.
So you're telling me the chief of staff at the hospital is not down there with you as we speak doing hot yoga?
No, I think there may be a couple of nurses that... I know that our instructor is an RN. So
aren't nurses just fabulous?
Yes, they are. Yes.
Have you ever had a bad experience with a physician?
Not necessarily bad.
But have you ever had a bad experience with a nurse?
No.
Well, see, you answer that very, very... mm-hmm. Well, I haven't either.
Uh-huh.
I just think nurses are some of the most fabulous people that we can look at in healthcare.
Yes, yes.
What would you say? You know what a woman told me the other day?
What?
I have a lady that comes to see me that's a yoga instructor, and she said one of the medical doctors there in Tyler at Christus was really interested in trying to encourage people that have post-traumatic stress disorder and also a condition called fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm.
To participate in yoga. Now, I don't think this was hot yoga, but still, you can see the benefits, right?
Definitely.
But I asked her, I said, how many people benefit? She said, all of them. The results are phenomenal. And you know what? That is just so easy for me to believe what she's saying. There's benefit to everyone taking yoga.
Right. I can definitely vouch for that.
Now, do y'all become one with the universe when y'all do this? Probably not.
No.
I'm just joking about that.
No, it's just a lot of stretching and moving, and it's just amazing.
And see, that's all it is. It's just stretching and moving and posture and calisthenics, and it's just a physical remedy, right?
It is.
Who would you say is the oldest person taking the class?
Oh, probably me.
Well, we don't need to ask an age, but do you move slower than others, or are you able to set the tone and keep up?
No, I can keep up now, not when I first started.
Well, how long did it take for you to get the hang of it?
Probably 6 months, I guess.
I was
Plain yoga, and then I don't think I've been doing hot yoga that long.
I was with a buddy of mine a couple months ago, and he says, hey, look at this right here. And he showed me a picture on his cell phone of his wife.
Uh-huh.
And she was doing a pose where she's just balancing on her hands. I thought,
yes.
How many women that are in their 50s could do that? I mean, that just takes an incredible amount of balance and strength and coordination.
You're right. Not everybody can do that.
would you believe me if I told you I read an article years ago and it said the number one predictor of how long a man was, and I realize women weren't involved, so no offense. But it said, what is the number one predictor of how well a man is going to age and how well he's going to be able to resist disease? And it was physical strength.
Gosh.
So the writing is on the wall. If you become physically weak, it's just nearly impossible to get your body to bounce back and have vitality, isn't it?
You are right.
Oh, I'm so proud of you. I'm glad you called.
Okay, thank you so much, Dr. Morgan.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, this is only information. I didn't say I'm recommending this, but I've heard of people exposing themselves easily to 160 degrees during hot yoga. I mean, that's pretty hot, isn't it? You could probably cook a chicken. Good morning and welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question about my 9-year-old grandson, who, by the way, is one of your customers. But anyway, the bottom of his feet, especially around his big toes, the skin is just peeling off in thick sheets and layers, and this is just not normal. What do I do?
Well, has he been somewhere where somebody has athlete's foot or anything like that?
Not to my knowledge.
Well, can we just do this in steps? And, of course, let me just give you the first thing that I would think of. Doesn't mean I'm right about this. I would probably take some apple cider vinegar. I have experimented with more forms of vinegar than you can shake a stick at. And I'm looking at my water bottle right now, and it looks like vinegar water because it is. But I love apple cider vinegar. And what you can do is just take a washcloth and just wipe the feet down with vinegar. And if it were me, and I'm going to give you three or four options, I would do this several times a day, just wipe the feet down with vinegar, but I would come back and coat them with oil. Now, I know full well that if you have a kitchen floor that's made of tile or linoleum, putting oil on the bottom of a 9-year-old's foot is probably not going to be, you know, it's not going to be dancing class, right?
Well, he never goes barefoot, so.
Oh, he never does?
Oh, no, no, no.
Well, go smell of his shoes and tell me what they smell like.
Okay, well, he does wear tennis shoes.
Well, and what we may find is he may have like a mild fungal infection.
Okay, okay. I do put this Silversol on it. I brought you a DVD one time about Silversol, and that kills anything that causes infection.
Well, let me give you a different take on this.
Yeah.
There are some physicians that believe the health of the body is more important than an antibiotic, and I would agree with that. And I realize that's not what you're saying, but if you can strengthen how the immune system relates to the skin, then it's able to resist disease. And let me give you a different example. This is probably pretty radical. If you've ever been out into the woods before, I remember one day I was watching this coyote from about 200 yards away, and as he moved closer, it was kind of foggy out, or there was mist. But I noticed he was just covered with mange. And mange is caused by one of two different types of mites. You know, they just burrow into the skin, and they just kill and destroy everything in sight. But that's the only one I've ever seen. But I would say the healthier the immune system of the coyote's, you know, skin or hair, he's going to be able to resist mites. They're just not going to form. The immune system can respond appropriately. And so one of the things that I would think of, any time that you have a problem with a foot, I usually think in boys or girls, zinc and cod liver oil. Zinc and cod liver oil. You're going to find out that the immune system functions much better when it gets those essential fatty acids from cod liver oil. There's a lot of people that are into fermented cod liver oil. I see great results just with plain Jane cod liver oil.
Okay, the liquid type, how would he ingest that?
Well, at 9 years of age, you're either going to go to the store and get something that's been flavored with maybe a cherry or strawberry or orange or lemon flavor just to make it more palatable.
Yeah, I have a bottle of it in my fridge.
Well, do you think that he would drink some of it just for fun?
Well, maybe if I absolutely insisted. You may remember this child last January. It's the little 9-year-old ADD boy from Plano. Me and his mom brought him in to you, and
he
put him on a bunch of stuff, and he's doing fabulous. He is 80% wonderful.
Oh, good.
Well,
I'm really, really tickled about the progress.
Yeah.
But what you're doing is you're going to look at wiping down the feet with apple cider vinegar.
Okay.
The other thing that I was going to say is the bottom of the foot in acupuncture, it's called an overflow point, and I always want to pay attention to those. So if you have anything on the bottom of the foot, I always have to tell myself, what if the body is trying to push out or eliminate toxins? What if it's detoxifying?
Okay.
And that's why, have you ever heard of an ionic foot bath?
You talked about that a couple of weeks ago, and
well, it's kind of interesting in that you can put your foot in there, and they use a solution with electrical current, and it helps draw toxins out of your feet.
And but you said to put something in that, and you called it. No, I can't remember what you
well,
said to put in that
ionic. The word ionic means it holds an electrical charge. So, for example...
Yeah, I've got an ionic air filter, yeah.
Yeah, and what it does is that electrical charge probably neutralizes, you know, mold and fungus in the air and viruses, things like that, and that serves a good purpose. The word ionic means a substance is holding an electrical charge. That's probably just my simple explanation. So, if you had... do you know what Celtic salt is?
Oh, yes, that's what I use.
Okay,
yes.
Well, that would be an ionized form of salt that's holding this electrical charge. Just in the same way, you may go to a doctor and he might say, you know what, I know why you're not feeling well. It's because you're low in sodium, and that's an electrolyte that holds electrical charge. Mm. But you might just even put a pinch of Celtic salt in the water that he drinks to see if he sees some improvement.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But cover the feet with oil, give the kid cod liver oil, and see, cod liver oil would be pure brain food if you ask me.
Okay, now, how much cod liver oil at a time?
You're going to give the kid whatever he'll take.
Oh, okay.
So if it's a liquid form, I would be tickled with about 2 teaspoons a day.
And zinc. Okay, I think you had him on some zinc. Of course, he did that stuff.
And zinc is so essential for... You know, when you talk about the integrity of the skin, zinc is a that's usually a rate limiting mineral, meaning if you lack it, you're going to start to manifest skin problems.
Oh,
but when
okay.
you have plenty of it, the other day I was reading a story about young boys, or an article that had exposure to Tylenol and vaccines, and they developed autism spectral disorder. But they're showing that those that have adequate levels of zinc, they express the least possible reaction to vaccines. Very interesting to me.
Well, I really believe it's the vaccines is why he got this ADD. I'll just always believe that. But, you know, all that toxins in a young brain like that should be illegal. Dr. Morgan, I have the standard process zinc. Is it spelled C-H-E-Z-Y-N? Is that the zinc?
No, that's it has some in it, but that's not what I use usually.
Okay, all right, then I've got another bottle here, Z-Y-M-E-X.
No, that's the Zymex. That's a product when you're trying to recondition the lining of the gut.
Oh,
so
okay.
Like if somebody had leaky gut syndrome or they had bowel issues. But anyway, I'm really glad to help you today, or I hope I helped you.
Yes, you certainly have, and Lord bless you richly.
Oh,
and I will get on it for this child, but I do want to... Thank you for helping him, and he's just about 80% so much improved. It's just absolutely a miracle, and I just can't
well,
thank you enough.
See, it really does take time to undo all that stuff, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, it
thanks
does.
For,
but it's well worth it.
Well, mm-hmm. Thanks for being consistent.
Thank you much.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
7. Obviously, it's a lot funner talking to y'all than it would be for me just reading articles to you, but I like that too. Sometimes I think when I'm reading articles on the air, I'm just talking to myself. But I like talking to myself. Good morning and welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
My wife and I have been doing the keto diet since the beginning of the year. And we're seeing good results. Here in the last week, she has had upper stomach, lower chest, pain, pretty intense pain.
Does it favor one side or the other?
No, it's all the way across, but it has begun radiating into her back. We did a bunch of tests at the ER. They said nothing comes back life-threatening, but check with your
what does that tell you?
Regular doctor.
But it was severe enough symptoms that you took her to the ER.
Right, but they said check with your regular doctor and have your gallbladder looked at. What effect does the ketogenic diet have on your gallbladder?
Obviously, you're trying to help yourself by trying to greatly restrict carbohydrates and increase fat.
Yes.
There's two or three things that you're going to have to consider. Number one, over the air or the radio, I can't possibly know the condition of every person's gallbladder, bile duct, pancreas, and liver. I can't. I'm not God.
Right.
That'd be nice if I had a crystal ball where I could just tune it in and say, okay, your wife's name's Sally. Oh, I can see your gallbladder right here in the crystal ball. No, I can't do that.
Right.
But there's going to be some things that are going to be very, very interesting that I would notice. And I'm just going to ask you some simple questions. Has your wife ever taken birth control pills?
No, she's had several years back, had a full hysterectomy.
Why did she have a hysterectomy?
That was before I knew her.
Well, at the very least, your liver is one of the most powerful organs in the human body. It's constantly monitoring almost every system. And what it does is it has all these very, very intimate sensors that try to tell the condition of organs like the uterus and the ovaries. But I would say one of the roles of your liver is to balance hormones. And it does that by making sure that if the levels get too high, it just promptly detoxifies and breaks down the excess ones. But the liver is a huge game changer. And so I think the more that I study people, the more that I study this, if a person does a ketogenic diet and it doesn't go as well as what they'd like, it's probably because they have a glitch in their liver. And so I'm really going to oversimplify this. Either going into it, her liver was tremendously clogged up and had a bunch of congealed, hardened bile in it, and she had a very sluggish gallbladder. See, I don't want to say what does a ketogenic diet do to a gallbladder. If the gallbladder's normal, it just helps it function better. But if you go into it with a very weak, underperforming, sluggish, lazy liver, then there's going to be an issue. And we have to tackle that. It's just a matter of, are you going to rely on the emergency room to give you accurate advice on how to improve liver function? Well, probably not, because they don't do that.
No.
You know what? You know what a doctor said back in the 1960s? He said, you can't treat what you don't know. Do you think that's true?
Yes.
So who are you going to ask about your wife's pain?
That's why I called you.
Well, I know, but this is the radio. This is not in person.
Right.
So all I'm doing, guys, I'm just giving you an idea, but I would suggest to you this pain, I'm almost positive we could trace it here. Is she right there with you right now?
No.
Well, I can tell you what you can do. Number one, if you take your thumbs and you press in between her shoulder, there's a little space, just a few inches between her shoulder blades and her spine, in just the middle part of her back. If you press firmly into that area and just rub up and down, that's called the rhomboid muscle. There is a very high correlation between rhomboids being very, very excruciatingly tender and having a very, very sluggish liver. So that would be one thing that you could do to kind of get a confirmation. But it's very easy to press into the liver, into the gallbladder and the bile duct, or the pancreatic duct, or any of those other structures and try to pinpoint where the problem's coming from. But if it's traveling across, my mind goes more to the liver than it does the gallbladder.
Okay.
So it just depends on what you want to do. You just can't solve this with a radio consultation. I wish you could. But you're going to have to give me more clues about your wife. Was she perfect in every way prior to this?
Absolutely.
Okay. Then why does she even do it then?
Well, you mean starting the keto diet?
Yeah. I mean, what was
she was following me.
Okay, but was she perfectly happy and fine prior to doing it?
No.
I mean, did she have any issues that she struggled with, or what did her body tell her? Did she have plenty of energy? Was she hormonally balanced?
For the most part.
How old is she?
She is, how old is she? 39.
She's just a kid. How tall is she?
Yes. 5'6"-ish.
Well, she's definitely taller than average. How much did she weigh going into it?
Before the keto? Before we started?
Yeah,
I'm thinking 145 to 155-ish. I'm really not sure.
Is that close to her ideal perfect weight anyway?
Probably not. It's probably a little heavy, but not a whole lot.
Was she taking any drugs routinely before she started this?
For a while, she was taking a statin.
Oh,
for cholesterol,
well,
but
that seals
that has stopped. She hasn't taken that since January, February.
If the liver is a little bit clogged up or sluggish or it needs to be repaired, what'll happen is when you do a ketogenic diet, quite often your cholesterol levels are going to go up. But there's a solution for that. What you do is you start the process of trying to repair the liver. Let me say this a different way. there's two or three things I'm always looking for. One of them, and I know this is not going to probably make logical sense, but I'm looking for chronic low-grade infection somewhere in the body. So
okay.
I always look at the sinuses. I look at the nose, the teeth, the jaw, the tonsils. There's only five sets of tonsils. I look at the ears always. But, I mean, this ain't rocket science. It's pretty easy to identify where those problems are coming from. But then I look at the liver and the gallbladder as a source of chronic infection. And sometimes the conditions are just right where you have all these bugs growing in locations where they don't belong, whether it be in a diverticuli or diverticulitis or diverticulosis. But anyway, that's some of the things that I'd be looking at when it comes to your wife. If she's not doing well with the ketogenic diet... Another physician said a long time ago, he said the main thing that you're trying to address with a health problem is you want to remove any obstructions to healing. So this was actually the same physician I quoted that said you can't treat what you don't know. So to make a long story short, there's something hidden about your wife's body right now. But I would be so curious, what is the condition of her liver? And so if I've seen 100 people... in the last 10 years, it all complained about the same thing. I bet you 99% of the time, I traced all of it right back to the liver. And so, another way of saying this is, one of the common symptoms if the liver is a bit sluggish is when you sleep at night, you just don't feel as rested as you'd like. And you may wake up a little bit more frequently than what you'd like to, as opposed to sleeping the night through being very peaceful and comfortable and well-rested. But you just feel sluggish in the morning. It's pretty common that when the liver is sluggish, it takes just a little while to get the juices flowing, to feel like your mind is sharp. Anyway, I hope that helps you, but let's look at her liver. The liver is probably what needs the attention. So really, doing this and having some discomfort show up, I realize this is probably not easy to receive, but I got love in my heart when I tell you this. This did us a huge favor by exposing some weakness that she had. There's not many drugs like a statin that can completely shut the liver down. And so I think if we look at, there's got to be enough information on our lab work to give us clues. This is the conversation I had with my wife last time. I said, okay, as long as human beings alive, there's going to be one aspect about our body that is totally physical and structural. So let's just say one component of health is going to be the condition of your muscles and your bones and your joints and your nervous system. Did I mention bones and joints yet? But yeah, there's physical. Do you remember when we were kids in elementary school, how our kindergarten teacher would come along and say, Roy, sit up straight, put your shoulders back, put your chest out, quit slouching in your chair, don't hump over. You know, but they tried to instruct us on posture. And that used to be important. Now, I don't know if that's as important today as what it used to be. But I remember hearing that as a kid. Sit up straight, stand tall, chest out, stomach in. But you know, posture plays a huge role, but that's only the structural component. And then we have, if you want to say psychological, mental, emotional, well, you know that we're emotional beings. You know, we have a physical body, but we also have that mental aspect or the emotional aspect. And so, this is what I was telling her. I said, sometimes as a chiropractor, you tend to focus very, very heavily on the structural, but you may ignore the influences of the mental or the emotional, or the other part of the health triad would be the chemical. And so that's all I know this just as well as you do because I see it all day long. Everybody has blind spots. I'm not trying to be critical. But sometimes in medicine, they only look at the chemical aspect of this. That means they do a blood test. I know you know this, but I'm going to repeat anyway in case you don't know this. It used to be when you went to a physician, a physician would listen to what you have to say. And I would just venture a guess 95% of the time that the patient, they can tell you exactly what their symptoms are, what the problem is, and where it's coming from. And if you ask them, what's your gut instinct on this, they can say, well, I think it's coming from here. Just like the guy said, the physician said, check her gallbladder. Okay. Well, 95% of the time, patients are usually 100% right. Just 95% of the time. So does it benefit you to actually do a consultation and listen to what the patient has to say? Yes, because they're giving you valuable clues. Every so often, I'll have a person walk in my door and they'll say, I'm not going to tell you anything about myself. I want you to tell me everything that's wrong. Well, you know what? That's really not a whole lot of fun. Because then, you know, what they want you to do is they want you to put on a show, you know, dancing ponies and a circus or whatever. And some people, that's just the way they think. And obviously, you can look at them, and you could tell their body is just a complete catastrophe, but in their mind, they think that they're perfectly normal. So I had a woman one time walk in the door, and she said, I'm not going to tell you anything about my health. I'm not going to do anything to help you out here, but you have to tell me. I'm going to see what you're really made of. And I thought, did you ask your other doctors to do the same thing also? Oh, no, no, no. I couldn't do that for a medical doctor. They would just kick me out of the office. I'm going, well, you know, it really helps if you point the physician the right direction so he can kind of focus on, you know, what the problem is. But sometimes in medicine, I digress, but sometimes in medicine, they only focus on the chemicals. So they're only looking at the role of chemical imbalances in the body. Well, the body is a lot more than that, and your health is a lot more than that. So this is an opportunity to expose and find out where your wife's weakness is. But yeah, there's not many drugs that can just totally destroy the liver like a statin drug is. I am certain that there are brilliant physicians that are itching to call me on the phone, and the number is 903-586-5257, that want to explain to me how statin drugs are the greatest thing toward the health of the liver, which would be counter from what I'm saying. And it's okay to get a second opinion, because a lot of times that's how we learn, and that's what my job is, to learn. I'm just very thankful I have people come to see me that give me a chance to learn about the human body. Well, good morning. How are you this Saturday morning?
Pretty good. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm great, thanks. How can I help you?
Hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Yes, sir. Okay, I got a quick question. It's for a friend of mine. She's 38 years old. She, about 2 years ago, she started getting a large knot on her forehead, and it looks almost like a small golf ball, but it moves to her nose and then to her upper lip. And she, I've only seen pictures of it. I actually have not seen it happen, but she showed me pictures of it. She gets symptoms beforehand, or she says she knows when it's coming on about a week before it happens.
Well, does the knot come and go?
Yes. Okay. It'll every 6 months. And I saw pictures of it. I mean, it's pretty big. There's no bruising or nothing. It just looks like there's a big knot in the skin. And it moves around. And it lasts for about a week. Anyways, wow. I'll go ahead and hang up. That's all I know. And I'll listen to what you got to say. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. Very, very, very interesting and intriguing. I can tell you the very first thought that I have, though, is the lymphatic system. And without going into huge detail, let's just say if we were to count the total number of veins and arteries that make up your circulatory system, well, folks, you have twice as many lymphatic vessels. So what do your arteries carry? Well, they carry blood. What is blood composed of? Well, blood is composed of red blood cells and platelets and hemoglobin and all sorts of good other proteins like albumin and globulin and, let me see, what else does it carry? A bunch of other stuff. So maybe one of the main roles of your blood is to carry an ocean of nutrients and oxygen to all your cells, and that's a very, very important function. I mean, don't we read in Leviticus that the life is in the blood? Well, I totally agree with that. Now, if we flip over to the lymph fluid, and I've read a lot of different reports on this, but this is what I'm going to go with. So if you have 8 pints of blood that make up your circulatory system, you know, what your heart pumps around, you probably have 3 times as much lymphatic fluid. And sometimes the lymphatic fluid, that'd be 24 pints. Did you get that? 24? What if you had 9 pints of blood? That would be 27 pints of lymphatic fluid. Sometimes the lymphatic fluid is called interstitial fluid, and sometimes it's called the white blood, because it doesn't contain any red blood cells. And I don't know if it contains platelets or not. I don't think so. But in your lymphatic fluid, oh, this is very, very intriguing to me. This is like the detergent of the body. It washes and bathes and cleanses every cell and removes the debris and helps detoxify. And so on one side of the body, on the right side, we have your liver. And your liver is one of the most sophisticated, intricate filtration systems that the human body has. I mean, how long would you live if your liver completely shut down? Not long. you wouldn't live very long. You'd live longer if your kidneys shut down, but still, that's a different story for another day. But your spleen, oh my word, there's the largest filter of your lymphatic system. But there's such an intimate connection between your digestive tract and your lymphatic system. But if I see knots come and go, then I have no choice but to think there's got to be some glitch in the lymphatic system that's causing this back pressure to build up and then for it to go away. I saw a woman yesterday that had an infected tooth, and she would complain for like 12, 13 years that she had this horrible pain in her neck and in her ear and her jaw on the left side, and it would radiate down her arm. But that's just backed up lymphatic fluid, full of debris and toxins and waste. So whatever your body does, your body is making moves and adjustments to heal you and to repair you. So I know it may not be physically attractive to see a huge knot come up on the forehead that moves down the nose and into the upper jaw or whatever the gentleman said a while ago. By the way, that gentleman sounded extremely intelligent. I know, I'm a good judge of intelligence, but the lymphatic system. So we're trying to find out what is the problem. Now, if you said, okay, I hear what you're saying about the lymphatic system, but what could be behind that? And I'd say that's a great question. Maybe there's some type of infection, but what I would have to consider is you have to look at the sinuses. So we have the frontal sinuses, we have the mastoid sinuses, we have the ethmoid sinuses, the paranasal sinuses, the maxillary sinuses, and the truth be known, probably the entire skull is a sinus. But that's where I would look. And maybe behind that we have a tooth problem. You know, infections sometimes can be waxing and waning. If you've ever heard of a person who has chronic sinus infections, they might tell you, you know what, this is a story I heard this week. Every 3 weeks I get a bad case of the crud. It doesn't matter what steroids the doctor gives me. It doesn't matter the antibiotics. It always takes about 10, 11 days for my body to get over it. But I repeat the cycle every 3 weeks. I'm going, really? He goes, yeah. How many antibiotics have you had in your lifetime? Hundreds, he said. Do I believe him? Oh, yeah. And that's just it. If somebody walks through my door and they're giving me permission to do my best to help them, they're always brutally honest. Sometimes they tell me more information about body functions than what I want to hear, but they are trying to be helpful. So if he says he has this bad case of the crud, that's green, yellow junk that he blows out of his nose and he spits up, well, yes. But wouldn't... Who out there listening right now would probably say, all right, I bet you anything he's got an infection when green stuff is coming out of his nose. Yeah, do you think? But what I'm after is, and this is one of the things that we did with him. You know, I hate to be wrong, because the desire of my heart is to be efficient and helpful. But you realize there is a tremendous art to being a physician. If you don't think that's true, then why do we have all these sick people? If every physician has all the answers, then why do people go from one specialist to the next, to the next, to the next, looking for answers, and yet they still get no help? But there's an art to doing this. Like I said earlier, a physician cannot treat what they do not know. That is correct. The other statement I made when I was quoting Dr. Goodhart, he said, healing is removing the blockages to healing. And I would say that's true also. And I think if a physician has a keen mind, he's going to study as much as possible, and he's going to try to understand as much about the functioning of the human body so he can more accurately pinpoint, like the man that called on behalf of his wife, if she has pain in that area. Oh my God. Now, he did ask me specifically, what are the effects of a ketogenic diet? Well, if your liver is all clogged up with gunk and debris, it's going to be pretty tough to do a ketogenic diet because it just can't process the fat. But a clean liver can, and a liver that's functioning optimally, oh boy, can that serve you well. You betcha it can. But I would say this woman that has swellings, I would look at what's called the lymphatic system, because when those lymphatic channels or those neurovascular points get backed up and filled with fluid, you're going to see swelling. And you're going to see it go right back down again. Now, I know this is only an analogy, but it's accurate. We used to call these little bee gnats buffalo gnats. I haven't seen a buffalo in the woods, so maybe they're Anyway, but I watched one bite the forehead of my father, and I tell you what, it swelled up with a big knot, but it was just a reaction. And so you'd probably say, well, Dr. Morgan, don't you think that was just an immune response? Yes. But that's what the immune system does to protect you when it feels like its integrity is being challenged or damaged by a poison. So whether it's a wasp or a bee or a bumblebee, spider, scorpion, your body's going to swell in an effort to contain it. I was stung by a scorpion not that long ago. Oh, that just felt great. I would say for a short season, I experienced just tremendous pain in my foot. I wasn't in the mood to go walking or running or jogging that exact moment. So the swelling of the forehead, lymphatic system. And so if we can pinpoint exactly, I mean, the entire body is just one big honking roadmap. But to me, the head is got to be the most fabulous area to look at when it comes to lymphatic issues. If you look in the work of Dr. Bennett, I mean, those are some of the most important lymphatic points in the body to examine to try to determine which systems in the body are underperforming or weak. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, let me turn my radio off.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if you have any idea about Charcot Marie tooth disease. It was discovered by these three doctors in the 1800s, but that was their last name.
Yes, but where is it affecting you? Is it your hip?
My legs and feet.
Oh, your legs and feet?
In my back, yes.
And you know what I thought of when I said the hip? I thought maybe it's that ball and socket joint where the femur joins the pelvis. But that's not your main area, right?
Well, a little bit. A little bit. The muscles in my legs are
Well, can I tell you?
I can't get up the steps.
Here's what my main deal is, and I realize I can't be everything over the radio, but this is a thought that I would have. I would say there's a lot of truth to when you hear a doctor or an herbalist or somebody else that's into natural medicine says, you know what, the body's too acidic. What they're really referring to is, or what the structure they're referring to, is probably going to be the condition of the blood. And see, under normal circumstances, your blood maintains a fine pH around 7.35 to maybe 7.4, 7.45. So it's slightly alkaline. So anytime that you have pain in the legs, it doesn't go away, and it just drives you crazy, and the legs become stiff and painful. They don't work right like a young child's do. I start thinking about too much acidity. So let me tell you what my thoughts are on this. Back in the 1930s, Dr. Henry Hauer, he talked about a condition called lactic acidosis. And I'm talking 1931 here, so I don't know exactly how many years that is, but let's just say we're coming up on 80 years. That's not 80, but anyway, we're somewhere between 80 and 90 years away from when Dr. Henry Hauer talked about that. And he was a very, very famous endocrinologist and medical doctor. But he would describe a condition called lactic acidosis. And so I'm going to go into too much detail, so please forgive me. If a person consumes more sugar or more carbohydrates or more starches that are broken down into sugar than what their liver can handle and process, when your body breaks down glucose, it breaks it down into pyruvate, which is kind of a form of sugar, into a substance called lactate. And lactate forms these acid crystals, and they float around the bloodstream. This is what happens when a person goes to bed at night, and let's just say they're a diabetic, and they check their blood sugar, and their blood sugar is 115 when they go to bed. But when they wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning, they check their blood sugar again, they're thinking to themselves, hey, I haven't eaten any food since 7 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock. I bet you anything my blood sugar is going to be 80. But they wake up and no, it is not 80, and it's certainly not 115. It's probably more like, 195 or 200. Now, that's lactic acidosis right there. Because what's happening is their body is overly acidic, and they're forcing their body to convert sugar into lactic acid. And what the lactic acid does, it makes the blood extremely dirty. Now, I know that's just my simple take on it. And so back in the 1930s, now, this is a rough estimate. If I get the information slightly wrong, you got to remember, I'm just little bit crazy sometimes about my numbers because I like to read, but I'm going to say back in the early 1930s, they maybe had identified about 24 B vitamins. I have never heard of a person dying from taking a B vitamin. They're essential to life. But in probably up in the 1940s, they maybe think now that there might be as many as 40 to 45 B vitamins. The problem is, if they don't know exactly how they work and exactly what their role is and exactly what they do for the human body, physicians and researchers sometimes tend to start thinking that maybe they're not essential. Well, can I ask you a question? Do you believe that if God created a substance, that it probably has a good purpose, even if we don't know what it is?
Yeah.
I agree with you. So I don't think God made any mistakes, but what happens is if a person is lacking all those, you know, 24 to 45 B vitamins, then they're going to easily convert pyruvate into lactic acid every single time. So in some ways, I view these as very, very severe B vitamin deficiencies. And the end result is you have more aches and pains, and you have soreness and stiffness, and your legs become weak. Now, I know this is a radical example, but if you had a grandson that was 18 years old and you said, hey, I want to come to your track meet, you're going to run the 200 meters, right? Well, I can promise you that's exactly what happens right here. He takes off in a dead sprint when the gun goes off, and bam, he's out of the starting blocks, and he's running and sprinting and racing around that first turn or corner in the 200-meter race, and he's just sucking in as much oxygen as he can, but what he's doing is he's burning sugar or glucose. It does not take long until his body completely loses its ability to convert sugar into energy, and so it has to switch over to what's called fermentation. But that produces lactic acid. Have you ever heard of somebody running a sprint and before, right at the end of the race, their legs are so stiff and so achy because of the buildup of lactic acid? Well, that's what's happening to you right now. With Marie Charcot tooth disease, there is going to be lactic acidosis. At least that's my opinion. And so what we've got to do is we've got to find a way to get natural B vitamins, not synthetic B vitamins. I mean, I've just tried those over and over and over again. It's maddening. They don't work. I mean, you can do that. That's one of the reasons why I'm a fan of things like brewer's yeast and nutritional yeast and natural B vitamins that are made from calf liver, stuff like that. I'm even a fan of apple cider vinegar. Now, apple cider vinegar doesn't have all the B vitamins, but I tell you what, it's a natural fermented process, and that's what bacteria do for us. They make B vitamins for us. So that would be one of the things that I would look at is, maybe you could start greatly limiting your carbohydrates and just trying to eat a little bit more fat. And on the second part of the equation is, what if you start taking a little bit of apple cider vinegar to see if we can't change the pH of your blood to make it a little bit more alkaline, a little bit less acidic? And this is why some people, they probably take like about a quarter to a half a teaspoon of just plain Jane baking soda and water every day. They're trying to help soothe those muscles and soothe the joints. But if you want to become pain-free and climb up and down stairs, I think that's a good thing to work on.
Okay.
But you probably have a very, and I mean this just as honestly from my heart as I can. One thing that you're dealing with is a very, very severe B vitamin deficiency.
Okay.
When you go to the doctor and say, what's your plan for helping me? What do they tell you?
Well, there's nothing you can do for it.
Oh, that's just a brilliant plan. I love that plan. Can you tell them I'm being sarcastic?
Yes, I told him, you aren't taught nutrition in college at all, are you? He said no.
Well, so I want to help you. What did the doctor say then?
Well, he doesn't know what to do. They say there's nothing to do but give you pain medicine.
But you really are. You're suffering with your legs, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, I have neuropathy, too. They said that from my back. I had back surgery.
Well, and I realize they said that, but at the same time, can I tell you a story real quick?
Sure.
I had a man come to see me fairly recent that was in his middle 80s. And if he's not his middle 80s, maybe he's 84. That's close enough, isn't it? But he was telling me about all these surgeries he's had, you know, heart bypasses, back surgeries. And I'm just going to tell you one of the stories. He went to a surgeon, and the surgeon said, I'm going to do this surgical procedure, and when you get up out of the wheelchair to walk out of the hospital, you're going to be a brand new man. All this horrible, horrible, horrible pain is going to be gone. And you know
what? That's not true.
Well, and it, what happened is the man came in, he said, I just feel like physicians won't listen to me. I feel like no one's going to help me. He said, if I don't respond the way the doctors think that I should, they won't return my phone calls if I tell them I'm still in pain. So this poor man, I'm telling you what, I kind of fell in love with his personality. I just thought he was just so clever and so funny, but he's in his middle 80s, and he's suffering every single day. And when he came to see me, I said, well, the first thing that we've got to do is we got to pinpoint where the pain's coming from. And I know this is going to sound overly simplistic, but he had a muscle in his back called the sacrospinalis. And when I tested his joints, no pain whatsoever. I did the orthopedic test, the neurological test, no problem. But his pain is being generated by this very large knot in the muscle. And so I know it hurts. But what he did was he let me try a manual technique on that muscle to see if I could get his pain to go away. And lo and behold, guess what happened? His pain went away for the most part. And I think his wife called and left a message yesterday, and I haven't had a chance to return her phone call. But she said, you're not going to believe this. He's just practically pain-free, and I'm doing exactly what you taught me to do. But she told me, thank you for listening. And it was just a very, very nice compliment because, you know, I live and breathe for feedback because I want to know what happens with this and how does this work and did you get a good response when you tried that. But that was just so sweet of her to call me and tell me that he was pain-free. And after all these surgeons had tried all these injections and all these surgical procedures, but they didn't even consider for a moment trying to identify where the pain was coming from. And see, can you see why it's hard for a doctor to prioritize? Because they just have 15 minutes to spend with you. They don't really have a chance to thoroughly examine you. So have you had a real thorough examination from a physician?
Not lately.
Would you like to go back to that old-time physician that actually tried to figure this out and examine you properly?
I don't think there are any.
Well, there are. You're talking to one of them. But to make a long story short, I would suggest to you that you have a very, very severe B vitamin deficiency, and it's causing acid crystals to build up in your blood. The problem is, when those settle in the muscles, it's just gut-wrenching pain.
And that what causes the knot on the muscles?
Yeah, well, that can be, yes, ma'am. Because you're getting this buildup of debris in there, and it's not able to leave.
I've gone to Addison for about the past 3 years for a laser deep tissue massages, and that's what's kept me going, but anymore they don't seem to be helping much.
All right, but what did those deep tissue massages do? They would help clear and remove the acidic debris from your muscles momentarily. That's why if you don't correct the biochemical metabolic problem, it just keeps coming back. But I'm all for the massages. And that's probably giving you more relief than anything else, right?
Right.
But foundationally, it's under that. Why are you accumulating all this waste and debris in the muscles? And if we could solve that mystery, that's where you get to become a brand new girl.
Yeah. Well, I have a chart. I wash my acids and I take Colquist, but that's not doing it.
Well, you know, when you get down to this, the two organ systems that I probably find myself, and yes, you already know going into this, I'm extremely, extremely biased toward natural remedies. I'm really in favor of them because I heal the body. And I'm very biased against drugs that are very toxic that don't do anything to heal the body, but they just slam the body with powerful agents that destroy. Yeah, I'm totally biased. I admit that.
I understand. I'm hooked on the hydrocodone, but I can't live without it because my pain is so severe.
Well,
and no one's
blaming you. No one's blaming you for that, and I don't want to be judgmental that way.
Yeah,
so
I
don't
just get off of these.
But I would look at your liver and your kidneys, and so I know if you go to a doctor and you say, "Tell me everything about my liver," he's going, "Oh, what are you talking to me for? You're not dead yet. Evidently, your liver's still working." But what if your liver is only working at 10% of optimal capacity?
Wow.
I have to see the kidneys improve. I have to see the kidneys improve in order to remove debris from the blood and the liver also. Those are your filters. I realize every tissue is probably a filter, from the digestive tract to the spleen to the intestines to the heart and the muscles. But the liver and the kidneys, that seems to be where I see most of the action when people have chronic severe pain in their muscles. Because if the liver and the kidneys can't remove it and filter it, all the excess goes to the muscles every single time.
Soda vinegar in the, I take the soda, but I don't take it every day.
Well, and if you'll be consistent, that will help. But what you've got is you've got a severe B vitamin deficiency, and most likely your liver and your kidneys are going to find great benefit if we can find a way to clean them and to repair them and to detoxify them. Now, I know those are simple terms. Let's detox your liver, or detox your gallbladder, or detox your kidneys. But there's still some truth to that, because a clean liver and a clean kidneys, you know what I, you know what I've told people, they look at me like I'm nuts sometimes. Not everybody, but just some people. If we can clean your kidneys, then you probably won't have much pain in your legs. But when, with leg pain, I've got to look at the liver and the kidneys every single time. They are not performing properly. And that's where that, this probably gets to be a little bit more complicated, but I realize I'm just out of time, but I wish you the very, very best, and I pray that God will bless you and it will help you to heal.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
Hey, you too. Thank you, man. Bye-bye. You're listening to Health Essentials on KBGS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.